Welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Heifel, a reporter and writer of the From the Vine wine column for The Record in Stockton, California. I'm certified level 3 with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust and a part-time tasting room associate at the Lodi Wine and Visitor Center. I hope you enjoy this podcast, which focuses on the Lodi American Viticultural Area. I welcome your comments and reviews on our Facebook group page at recordnet.com/FTV209. And you can follow us at FTV209 on Twitter and Instagram. Welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Heifel, and it's my great pleasure to have Mark Chandler with us. And boy, I tell you, I was going through Mark's biography, and I really didn't know where to start. He is prolific in Lodi as a wine grower, winemaker, marketer, educator, CEO, and also very involved in the political arena. Mark has 30 plus years of experience in the wine business. He's well known for his 20 years as executive director of the Lodi Wine Grape Commission, where he transformed the Lodi wine region into one of the most vibrant, innovative, and rapidly growing wine appellations in North America. Mark was elected to the Lodi City Council in 2014. He served as vice mayor in 2015, and he was Lodi's mayor in 2016. Mark won re-election to the City Council in November of 2018, and in December 2018, he was voted to his second term as mayor. On top of all that, Mark is a wine grower. He and his wife, Jan Burlington Chandler, have a great lineup of wine that we're going to taste and discuss with you today called Burlington Chandler. So, and I should note that Jan is also extremely accomplished. She's president of the San Joaquin Sulphur Company, and she's a co-chair of the Lodi Memorial Health Foundation. So it is a great pleasure to have Mark with us. And busy as always, there goes the cell phone. I was expecting that, but Mark, thanks for taking some time out of your busy day.
Happy to do it. Happy to catch up with you and let you and others know the trajectory, you know, all of this development that I helped create around Lodi. We at the Wine Grape Commission are very proud of the windows of opportunity that we opened for growers to vertically integrate, add value instead of just, you know, growing grapes and selling it to the winery, which the vast majority of our growers still do, and as do I. But we opened windows of opportunity for people to create brands and involve more family members in the operation. I call it farmland preservation. You know, when your kids come home with degrees in viticulture, technology, marketing, business development, IT. There's places for families to work together to, you know, create a reputation for their brand and for the Lodi area. And it's just been really exciting to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And I look forward to the next generation. I think that our business is in good hands. They're doing a fabulous job. I call them kids, but I know they're all in their 30s now, or maybe 40s. But, you know, being able to hand it off to the next generation is something that's going to be a real thrill around this area.
It must give you great satisfaction to see how this region has grown from when you started the Lodi Wine Grape Commission. It was the Lodi Woodbridge Wine Grape Commission in its infancy, but we're up to 85 wineries now.
And actually, it depends on how you do the math, because there are certainly 85 facilities, but when you have places that do custom crush for other people, like where a state crush is, there's 40 or 50 clients in there with their own brands. So there are literally hundreds of brands, not just in Lodi, but all over the state, that buy Lodi grapes and put Lodi appellation on the label, which we are especially proud of. And that started with the Zinfandel, but it has grown as we have diversified, and as Marcus Bokish was such a help in helping establish the Rhone varieties and the Spanish varieties, and their families that are focusing on German varieties and Portuguese varieties. So it's just exploded. And our climate is so perfect in terms of, you know, it's warm, it's not too warm, it's cool, not too cool. We can do a lot of things really well.
Right.
And so that's been another you know, long times, you know, a couple of decades in development, but it helps flesh out the story here.
Right.
And, you know, Lodi was really considered a viticultural backwater when we started this in the late 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. And it needed a makeover. It needed a makeover in the reputation department, but also needed a makeover in the quality department. Mm-hmm. And we established a program that actually addressed both things at once. And that was the Lodi Rules Program, the mm-hmm. Sustainable Farming Program,
right.
which gave us a more contemporary interpretation. And lo and behold, a lot of the families in Lodi are fourth, fifth, and sixth generation, so they value the land, and they want to hand it down to the next generation in as good or better condition as they got it. So it was right. a natural fit to start a program like this in Lodi. And fortunately, the practices that you recommend in a sustainable farming, are they go hand in hand with quality enhancement. So it was all going the right direction.
Right.
And
right.
then you've got some breakout families that established brands that became widely distributed. The Phillips family comes to mind, and there are others who really set the bar in terms of getting out there and getting the word, you know, the Lodi name out there.
Right, right.
And the Wine Grape Commission was always in a pioneering role or a supporting role mm-hmm. and brought a lot of resources to help those brands grow.
Right.
And that's kind of where we are.
Right. And I think now Lodi is enjoying such a renaissance, and at least in the, I think at least on the outside looking in, you know, where people maybe didn't know much about Lodi or just thought yes. it was, you know, too hot to grow white grapes. We've dispelled that. All these different myths that people, misconceptions that people had about Lodi, I think are slowly being eroded away.
Yes. And it's, in some cases, it's one by one. You know, you bring the writers in. I like to brag that we have 100% conversion rate, because I can take the yeah. most staunchly Eurocentric wine-loving writer and right. bring them through Lodi, and they're astonished at the climate, the people, the wine, and they go away
right.
happy. Like,
right.
oh, I've got something nice to say about this area now.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I'll be back.
And authenticity, too. I think when they meet the growers,
exactly.
they meet the winemakers, there's that just that. I mean, that seems to be a consistent message everyone puts out after they visited here for
right.
the first time.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, which is a great thing.
And it has been a lot of fun and very gratifying to, you know, being at the leading edge of that. I'm very proud
yeah.
of that, 25
right.
years. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now, as I promised my wife, one, I promised her I would never run for public office. I broke that promise.
And how?
And then I promised her we would never have our own wine brand, and now we're breaking that promise. But it certainly keeps life spicy.
Right.
And so we've taken a little tiny bit of the production that we grow for other major wineries in the area and put up a few hundred cases of each variety. Mm-hmm. And we like the way they taste, and we think there's an opportunity to explore that. And speaking of the next generation, I have a son that works for wine.com. He just sells the heck out of the wine online, and so mm-hmm. he's totally vested. Our daughter lives in the Northwest, and she'd like to be, you know, kind of sales rep. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's great
yeah.
to have that next line interested in the family business. Now, are you a fourth generation Lodian? Or
no,
Lodian?
I am.
Where did I read that?
Well, I'm a fourth generation San Joaquin Valley farmer.
Valley. Okay.
On my father's side. On my mother's side, I'm seventh generation California. It goes clear back to Father Sarah's day.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
a lot of history here.
Uh-huh.
Jan is third generation Lodi.
Uh-huh.
So I bring a lot of farming background to this effort, and really enjoy, you know, Lodi is such a special place in terms of the climate and the soils. And we picked out a couple of pieces of land that came up for sale when we were back in our higher earning years, and we had, you know, the investment dollars to put into it. And uh-huh. I couldn't be prouder to own 180 acres of some of the finest soil in the world.
Yeah, right.
Who wouldn't
right.
want to
uh-huh.
as a farmer? So, uh-huh. no, we're thrilled about that. And then to me, wine is sort of the ultimate intersection of culture and agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is an agricultural product at its core, but it also
right.
reaches all the way up into art when
right.
you have the kind of expression you do in these wines that we're
absolutely.
Making.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
it is an art form, and it's in its truest sense. And what is so interesting about wine is how many subjects encompass so many different subjects. You know, history, topography, soil type, climate, on and on
yeah,
and on. And then if you get into the winemaking aspects of it, it's a deep rabbit hole.
Well, it's just infinite.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
infinite. And so there's always something new to discover. And anytime you start getting yourself full of your wine knowledge, watch out, because there's always something around the corner to humble you.
So true.
I always keep an open mind.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your wines, Burlington Chandler, and they're just coming out, right? And I just would love to hear what's kind of behind the project and kind of the philosophy you have as a winemaker with this brand.
Okay. It's a well-worn phrase, but really we want the expression of the soil and the vine to come through in the wine. So we grow them as meticulously as we can. All of our vineyards are certified under the Lodi rules. One of our wines, the Malbec, that was made for us by Mike McKay, is all native yeast fermentation, all French oak aged. And we think that does a wonderful job of expressing what that Malbec field can do. And so all of the things that we grow internally, the Cabernet Sauvignon and the Malbec Rosé, are also Lodi Rules certified. We will have a Chardonnay that was made for us by another winery, and it's not Lodi Rules certified, but I know they use sustainable practices, and that's just to help us flesh out the line.
Right.
So,
yeah, with Lodi Rules, there are about 46,000 acres certified Lodi Rules, but how many countless acres follow the Lodi Rules protocol, in essence, but are not certified? Because it does take time and money and to be Lodi Rules certified. But that's certainly not to say that only 46,000 acres in Lodi would be certified if they,
I think the values and the philosophies of sustainable wine growing are pretty much endemic, throughout the whole grower community. It does cost a little extra to farm that way. It does cost a little extra to get certified. What we had hoped, and in a few cases it came to pass, was that the wineries that bought the grapes from the growers would value the extra effort and offer a reward as a bonus in a price per ton. There are a couple of wineries that do it, but it's not very widespread.
Right.
And in fact, many of the larger wineries will tell you, we want them certified, but that's just the way to get the door open, and there's no extra dollars to play.
Maybe in time.
I think in time.
Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Should we mention Michael David maybe and Bogle as two of the
wineries?
Yes,
those are the two that do. And I do have a contract with Michael David, I'm very happy to say. And they are a unique winery to work with because they're growers at their heart. And so they understand that a grower needs to make a profit, and they understand the extra effort it takes to get the certification. So they reward you for that.
Right.
They also reward you for they have a whole quality regime that they taste through with their staff, winemaking staff, and the growers. And if you rank highly in the quality thing, you get a little bonus there. And they pay you extra for the sugar if you come in on above 26 or whatever their target is. They reward you for that, unlike some wineries that don't. It's a very mutually respectful relationship.
Right.
Put it that way.
Very good. So we have the Malbec Rosé in front of us right now.
We're
gonna go through it a little bit and tell us about this wine.
Well, this is 2018, so it's just fresh from last fall, and we picked the grapes a little bit earlier than we picked the fully mature Malbec for the red wine, and consequently the alcohol is a little lighter. It's about 13% alcohol. The color is lighter pink / sort of salmon colored, and the aromas are really lovely: melon, strawberry, a little bit of cranberry, and it's very bright on the palate. It's got very firm acidity, and it's got some tannin. So it's a really complete wine. It's not just it is a summer sipper, but it's got a little bit of more body to it, more complexity to it than that. So it's a good food wine. It's going to be a terrific food wine. So we're excited about having this. We've only made a couple of barrels of it, so it's going to be a spring sales feature, and then we'll move on to the next year.
It has an aroma that, for lack of not a very sophisticated description here on my part, but just as a consumer and smelling this, it is enticing. I mean, it makes you want to take that sip after sip. I mean, it just has a delicious fruit aroma. I'm getting the strawberry, like you mentioned.
Yes. That's my litmus test on tasting wine. And believe me, one of the few things you didn't mention that I'm a wine judge at several venues. And I'm the chief judge at the California State Fair Wine Competition. Mm. So I've been judging wine for about 20 years. And my litmus test is, does it invite a second glass?
Uh-huh, right.
And I can tell you how many thousand wines I've tasted that, yeah, they got maybe a bronze award or something. But I really probably wouldn't go back for that second glass. Mm-hmm. Silver and gold or double gold, I'm definitely going to look for that second glass. But so thank you for the compliment. Yeah. It does. It really does invite another sip, doesn't it?
It does. And it has a real nice finish to it. The acid is nice and bright. The fruit is lively as a result. Mm-hmm. The strawberry, the fruit is there. It does have some structure, as you said. I mean, would you call this medium minus or even maybe medium bodied?
I would call it medium bodied. Hides that is the acidity. That bright acidity makes you feel like it's lighter bodied than it is. But actually, when you let the wine rest on your palate a little bit, you notice that there not only is there the tingling of the acidity, but there's also some lingering mm-hmm. tannins on your tongue.
Absolutely. You know,
and so that speaks to a little more complexity, a little more body. Yeah.
Did Mike make the rosé? I'm sorry if you said that.
No, the rosé actually was made at a State Crush.
At a State Crush. So, okay, so Bob Colarossi at a State Crush made it.
Yeah.
Interesting. You're the grower. What's the relationship between you and the winemaker? How does that kind of evolve? What's that process like in crafting a wine?
Well, I think that it's certainly a joint effort in that the grower is trying to accomplish something and you choose the winemaker that you think is going to help you achieve it best. Mike McKay and I have been friends for a long time and he wanted some Malbec for his own production. So he came to me and said, yeah, I need a few tons. I said, well, pick a few more tons and put it up for me. So that's the way it works.
That's it.
And it's worked out great. And then we've had our wines made just because of our scale, which is really only started out as a few barrels at a time. So the State Crush specializes in that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Down just to complicate things a little bit. We had some Cabernet Sauvignon that we wanted to put up from 2018, and neither one of those wineries could take it, so it's over at Van Ruten's. So we're working with three different wineries, and I can tell you it is a community of winemakers.
Yes.
But they're all competent people, and they know if you tell them what you're trying to accomplish, they know how to limit the skin contact, or if you're looking for a bigger red, how to extend the skin contact and so forth. They have their protocols, but they're willing to insert your desires to make sure the wine is what you want it to be.
Right. Was this 100% stainless, or did it get any oak?
This is 100% stainless.
100% stainless. Yeah, they get that crispness.
Exactly.
Real beautiful fruit expression.
Well, and the tannins come from just the skin. So even though it had limited skin, it had about 24 hours of skin contact.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to extract some tannin there, but it's all very well balanced. And
that's delightful. It really is.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have you try. I mentioned that I put some Cabernet up at. There's a dump bucket.
Okay. I hate to do this, but we need to make room.
Yes. All right. So before we get to the mature reds, this is a tank sample. It's about to go into barrel. This is a 2018 Cabernet Sauvignon. And I'm really thrilled. I just tasted this with the winemaker, John Giannini, this morning. And I thought you'd find it interesting. We've decided to go into some neutral oak barrels. And I love the color. So this is 2018 Cabernet Sauvignon. It's very intense in color and aroma. And there's a unique feature to this wine, and that is that we used the agrothermal machine on the vines. And that's a machine that uses a propane burner, and you take it through the vineyard about once a week during this time from bud break through veraison, and it gives you deeper anthocyanins. It improves your pollination rates, It enhances the not just the budding level, but the fruit level, where you'll have more berries per bunch, and more of them will actually pollinate to give you hopefully a larger crop, but interestingly, deeper polyphenols and anthocyanins. And winemaker told me today, you know, I've been tasting this wine against some of the other wines in our plant, and I can't really figure out why it's so much more tannic. And I said, that's because I put the agrothermal machine through there. And he goes, aha, that's it. And it really is a marked difference. I'm excited about putting this in a barrel, letting those tannins soften. It'll have deep, rich color. It's got nice acidity. It's just right there at 13.9 alcohol. So this is going to be a big, rich, full-bodied Lodi Cabernet.
And what is the vintage?
18. And that's why it tastes so fresh. When you get to it, you'll see this has got, you know, again, some of those, it's got blackberry, cranberry notes, a little bit of tobacco. I'm just really, really thrilled with the complexity of the aroma and the flavors on this wine. 2018 is going to be a great vintage.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that lovely?
Oh, it's amazing. Oh, my word. We're getting some great Cabernets out of Lodi. Do you think growers and vintners are understanding the varietal better now?
Oh, I think so. I think very much so. And we're getting, I'm happy to take our Cabernet from Lodi. A number of producers are doing a wonderful job with it. You know, Larry Mettler started back in 1999 putting out the more complex, deeper colored, full flavored, full barrel aged. And a lot of people have followed in his footsteps. Back when everybody was just doing Zinfandel and Petit Sirah, and here we are with these really luscious Cabernet.
That's the word. And Chad Joseph describes Lodi kind of as voluminous when it comes to the
absolutely
the fruit and that flavor profile. Voluminous fruit.
Yes.
On this.
It's very accessible fruit. And today's wine consumer doesn't really want to wade through, lots of, vanillin in the oak and the tannins on the body and put it away for 6 or 8 years before they can enjoy it.
Right.
They want to buy it off the shelf and drink it. So our goal when we get this, you know, it'll be 14 months or so in oak, maybe more, depending on what we find out when we get there. And then give it some bottle age and produce a medium plus bodied, but very bright in the fruit and the acidity. You can tell that's a characteristic that's not going away.
No, this has, I mean, you just kind of foresee what's going to happen to this wine and where it's going to be when it's ready to release all of
That's blackberry, blueberry, boysenberry. It's all those bright berries,
right.
Dark
all
berries.
Blue fruit, that vibrant blue fruit. I get the blueberry and the boysenberry.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good enough to drink right now.
It is. No, it really is.
Yeah. But I want these tannins to integrate a little
bit.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think where it is right now, it's right where it should be. But those tannins do need to kind of settle down a little bit. But that fruit just comes through so brilliantly in this. And the aroma is just beautiful. And I like the color. I love the color, too.
Yes.
Kind of a light purple, a nice deep core, and then it kind of
purple.
Gets to a
nice and that's color. Again where I had mentioned earlier these the translucent wines that Esther Mobley writes about in the Chronicle. I think there are some wines from Lodi that will fit that character. They don't all have to be inky black to be satisfying. They can be these medium tones and still carry complex flavors and aromas.
Yes. Now, the 2018 California Grape Crush Report just came out as we're recording this. It was about a week ago, and it was a couple months later, a month or so late, due to the federal government shutdown. But nonetheless, Cabernet has really been Lodi's number one varietal in terms of tons crushed.
Yes.
Why do you think that is?
Well, that's a direct response to consumer demand. Uh-huh. As much as we have pitched ourselves as a Zinfandel district, when you look at the volume of Zinfandel produced and Zinfandel sold, it's not even a third of what the Cabernet market is. So Cabernet is the king of red wines. That's what people recognize. That's what they want to try. They want to explore trying Cabernet from different districts, and that's where Lodi comes in. And tremendous amount of Cabernet has been planted in this district over the last decade, and for good reason.
Yeah.
You know, we make a good wine out of it.
Absolutely. And people always want to compare, you know, as maybe a basis of understanding. So I'm sure you get a question a lot, like, is it like a Napa Cab or a Sonoma Cab? And the answer is no, and it shouldn't be.
No, it's not. It's not at all.
You know, it represents what Lodi produces, you know, and I think that's important to stay true to yourself.
Well, and I think it gives consumers a place to land in the marketplace, because how many people can afford a $50 or $150 bottle of Cabernet? They can't.
50?
Yeah. But, you know, yeah. So we can produce it at varying price ranges, all the way from $15 up to $60 or $70, which are the most expensive cabs in Lodi right now. Mm. But by and large, around $30, you're getting a really terrific bottle of wine, and on a more frequent basis, you can enjoy it a lot more often than those rare occasions when somebody spends, you know, $50 or more.
Right. No. Great job on this wine. This is really, it must be fun to kind of have that reaction, or have something after growing for so many years to actually have the tangible product to share with people.
Yes, it's a lot of fun and a lot of pride, and it's very gratifying for somebody to compliment you on something that you know, your blood, sweat, and tears were invested in the field to make that happen. And so from that point of view, it's extremely satisfying.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And our wines have been, and you'll taste the other two that are mature in the bottle right now. We've been getting terrific feedback on the wine, so we're very pleased about that. And sometimes you don't know. You know, it might have been a spotty vintage or this or that, and you make it into wine, you put it in the barrel, and you hope for the best, and you do what you can at the final blending stage, et cetera. And to have it come out in such a satisfying way for consumers, it's great to get that response.
Yeah, that's outstanding. Mm. Very good.
So that's
again, shame to
that. Portends well for the future.
It does.
That bottle of wine.
It has.
And we have more of it than we have ever made of any wine yet. So if it's as popular as we think it's going to be, we'll have enough wine.
Do you have kind of an idea of how many cases you might release of that one?
That's going to be somewhere in the 600 cases or so. And most of our other wines are anywhere from, I mean, really and truly, we've done barrel lots, one or two barrels of things that are only 50 or 60 cases. Uh-huh. And then we've got wines that are a couple of hundred cases each. But if this is successful, it'll be our first batch that would be over 500 cases.
That's great.
So, yeah. Okay, so we've been talking about Malbec. This is our 2015 Malbec that Mike McKay made, and this is I was mentioning that this is all estate grown. It is certified Lodi Rules production. It's all native yeast fermentation, as Mike likes to do.
Tends to do that, yeah.
And all French oak barreling. So I'd be interested in your feedback.
Okay. And the vineyards, your vineyard for this is located where?
It's right on Peltier Road and Des Moines Road. Just about a third of a mile west of 99 on Peltier Road.
I think this has that delicious, characteristic Lodi aroma profile, if that is fair.
Yeah, yes.
And I think what I mean by that is this is West Side.
Yes.
West Side fruit.
Right.
It has that West Side feel to it.
Right.
There's an earthy component to it.
Very much so. Very much so.
Really, really nice.
Yeah. I was chatting with some other winemakers about this variety because it's not the easiest variety to grow. Mm-hmm. It's not the easiest variety to get ripe. And so you're always on pins and needles a little bit. But one of the winemakers I was chatting with said to me, you know, if you get the grapes to where the blueberry phase is, that's the signature fruit that you're looking for. I think we achieved that with this wine.
Definitely.
So this is a 2015. So it's, you know, 4 years, 2 years in the barrel and 2 years in the bottle already.
So this was bottled in 2017.
Yes. It was bottled in 2007, somewhere July, midsummer of 2017. And it's been interesting to watch the trajectory of this wine, the maturity, because one of the reasons we had to get it bottled in midsummer of 17 is because my daughter was getting married at the end of October, and we wanted a wine for her. And we did put up about 20 cases that we took up to the wedding with their wedding label on it. And it was brilliant and satisfying and yummy then, and it still is now, except that it's got the much more maturity to it now. Yeah, it's really showing well.
Are you saying that some of those tertiary components are kind of coming through now in the wine?
Mm-hmm. And it's just settling down. You know, it's not a teenager anymore like it was.
Yeah.
It's sort of in middle age. Thankfully, it's not an old age, but it's kind of in middle age. It's really... I think it's delicious. Mm. I'm getting, again, the cranberry, the boysenberry, and then the blueberry, which is really the dominant.
Right.
Mm. And the wood has settled in nicely. You still get the vanillin off of the French oak, but that's adding complexity. The finish is long and clean. The acidity is bright.
There's so much fruit on it, but to me it tastes like a wine that's maturing. Mm-hmm. It has that kind of softer tannin structure. Structure's still there. It's elegant. It's showing some restraint. It's mm-hmm. not a fruit bomb by any stretch.
Right.
I think it's a beautifully layered, complex.
Yes.
Very aromatic.
Right.
Really delicious.
Many, many more years of enjoying this wine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this has some potential to lay down.
Yeah.
No question. What a beautiful wine.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're very pleased with it. You know, I think it just goes to show when you really pay attention to your grape growing and your irrigation management and your cropping levels, Lodi can, these are wines that Lodi can make day in and day out.
Yeah.
It's a 14% alcohol, so it's got, it's there.
It's there, but it's not too much.
No, it's not hot.
It's not hot. No, it's not hot. Yeah, so that's what's been so, among many things about Lodi that's been so exciting in the last several years, maybe the last decade, is with more growers getting into the wine business. I think they bring all of that experience and all of that knowledge to the table in making the wine.
Right.
And there's a vested interest too, I think, in them creating wines that will lift the profile of Lodi and hopefully get more money for their grapes.
Absolutely.
And we're to benefit from it.
No, absolutely. You know? And they're very much, that is part of the plan. Because few of the wineries that are popping up, and I even admit that as closely engaged as I am with the local wine industry, wineries pop up all the time that it's hard to keep up with it.
Yeah.
And Jan and I went to a couple over the weekend purposely because we hadn't been there yet.
So, right.
Try to stay current.
Right. Who'd you visit, by the way?
We went to Pesquette.
Oh, okay.
Where we had not been, and we went to another one. But it was fun to go to Pesquette because my father-in-law, Bruce Burlington, is good friends with Herb Pesquette, who was the owner of the vineyard.
Uh-huh.
So, but it's the next generation, his daughter, that's creating the wine label. So this is this goes back clear back to 2014. It's our estate Cabernet Sauvignon. It was made for us at Estate Crush. It has the Lodi Rules certified logo on the back. Again, it's about 14% alcohol. And this is actually our most popular seller. And so you can find this at some retailers and certainly lots of restaurants around town, as well as with the Malbec is starting to show up on more wine lists in the Stockton area. So we're very excited about that. And this is showing some more maturity. It's a 2014. It also had over 2 years in the barrel. And now it's 3 years in the bottle. So it's a very rich, true to variety Cabernet Sauvignon, Lodi style Cabernet Sauvignon, which is not big and bold and rich and you know, it doesn't assault your palate. It actually sort of embraces your palate with the typical variety varietal characteristics. It's got some sort of black tea, a little bit of anise, a little bit of tobacco.
A little black olive, maybe?
Mm-hmm. A little black olive. But also, you know, underneath it, plum, dark cherry, you know, those really rich on the palate kinds of fruits. Nice lingering finish, very pleasant, a long finish. Goes with a tremendous variety of foods around here. It could be beef or pork or, you know, paella even around here. So we poured it Easter Sunday with ham. And oh, the Malbec went with ham also.
Yeah, I could see this going very well with ham.
Yeah.
Kind of something savory and salty and a little sweet if you get a burnt edge, which I love on a baked ham.
Yeah. See, that one invited a second glass
already. Yes, there you go. So that would have scored well at the state fair.
Yes. Yeah.
No, it really has a great aroma profile. Beautiful fruit. Mm-hmm. And what I would say, and something my wife appreciates about...
Sorry.
Not at all. About Lodi Cabernet across the board is, yes, there is tannin. Yes, there is structure. But it's not too much. For someone like my wife, who's not a huge wine drinker, these are approachable.
Yes.
And I think that's true of most Lodi wines, is Absolutely. Their approachability.
Absolutely.
And like you said earlier, a lot of the wines do improve or can improve with age, but for the most part, they're ready to go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the saving graces of Lodi wines, is that they are ready to drink sooner than some other regions. And from a winery point of view, you know, all your cash is tied up in this.
It's true.
And the fruit and the barrels and the glass and the bottles.
Right.
And there it is sitting in your warehouse.
Right.
And if you can sell it a year earlier than somebody else, then your cash flow position just improves.
Right.
Sorry to get straight to business. But
so it's about a three-year window or time from planning to expecting, a crop that could make a nice wine, 3 to 5 years generally?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time.
Yeah.
And it's very rewarding, but it's not for the faint of heart financially.
No. Financially, no. No, no. So this is in the marketplace right now. Mm-hmm. I know that some of your wines are available at the Lodi Wine and Visitor Center. You were mentioning that there's some restaurant wine lists in our area. We're so lucky to be here.
Right.
That carry your wines and some other retail opportunities.
So there, the Lodi Wine and Visitor Center certainly has the Malbec. I'm not sure if they still have the Cabernet. They've had the Cabernet before, but restaurants like Yume and Thai Spices, downtown Nosh has the Cabernet, and there's a few other restaurants in Lodi and several in Stockton that are carrying it. And I'm going to, on a renewed push to generate more retail sales, and that's an area that needs developing from our point of view. It's always nice to be on those wine lists, because that gives you visibility. Whether they actually buy your wine or not, they see your brand. And that's the whole philosophy behind being on wine lists, which we've been successful at. But now it's time to fill the gap in terms of making it making a presence at retail level.
Well, I love this. Your Malbec and this Cabernet Sauv are just excellent.
Yeah, and so then what we do occasionally, and you can't see this, but I'm throwing a little bit of the Malbec into the Cabernet Sauvignon.
Uh-huh. Make it a little blend here.
A little Bordeaux-style blend.
Bordeaux blend.
And that's what, and that has even, you know, now it has double the complexity. Mm. So that's a direction that Jan and I we're toying around with what we have in inventory right now to see what marries best. And of course, you have to be consistent with your vintage dates and so forth.
Huh.
So this line would potentially have a Malbec and a Cabernet Sauvignon and a Bordeaux blend,
mm-hmm.
and then the rosé and the Chardonnay. So that's.
Yeah. And I don't think we've talked about the Chardonnay. You want to maybe describe that? So
it's a lovely Chardonnay. It's from 2017. It has a really lovely floral aromas. We don't have one here to taste today. It has kind of a honeysuckle characteristic on the nose. It was put up for us by the Van Ruten Family Winery.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to get it in the bottle because mm-hmm. it tastes so terrific right now. And it's got, you know, the typical aromatics, but also that medium body that Lodi does. It's not buttery.
Uh-huh.
It's got a nice brisk acidity, but lots of fruit. It's very pleasant, you know, from the first sip. It's just an easy wine to like. We put got a little bit of oak aging, but not very dominant.
Uh-huh.
We want it to be consumer friendly, where you can sip it on its own, or it would go with you know, food.
Fantastic.
Go with your shrimp or your crab cakes or
there
fish, you know, those kinds of things. So.
Now I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Well, great to spend time with you, Mark. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Before we started recording this podcast, Mark gave me an idea of his day so far, and it started with a city council meeting at 7 o'clock this morning, then a trip out to the vineyard, and then to come here today, and then you're going back out to the vineyard this afternoon, and then more government business later this evening. So
it's a frenzied pace these days.
Never.
And it's springtime. You know, it wasn't so bad a month ago because the grapes weren't out yet. So when grape season hits, it's a lot going on.
Well, we appreciate your time so much, Mark. Thank you for all you're doing too, and all you've done to help elevate Lodi for the rest of us to enjoy. Well, it's a great place to be, thanks to you.
Well, thank you. It's been a lot of fun, frankly.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you very much, Bob.
And before we go, Mark, could you tell us your website address for people who are interested in more information on Burlington Chandler Wines and how they can buy some?
Yes, that's burlingtonchandlerwine.com. We've got lots of background information on our vineyards, my wife and myself, and where you can find the wines.
Great. So Burlington, Burlington, Chandler, Chandler, wine, W-I-N-E, .com. There you go, burlingtonchandlerwine.com. Mark Chandler has been our guest on the From the Vine podcast. We thank him and wish him nothing but the best. Burlington Chandler Wines, keep an eye out for them. This is a new line from an experienced grower that is absolutely worth checking out. You will enjoy it, I guarantee you. So please follow us on our Facebook page, also on Instagram and Twitter at FTV209. This is Bob Heifel. Thanks for joining us on the From the Vine podcast. Until next time.